We present Teddy Johnson as Steve Gardner in The Wolf Far Hence, a serial thriller in six parts by Edward Boyd. Part one, The Nightmare.
Everywhere it's happening, and more and more. And nobody cares anymore, and thinks it any more important than the time it takes up in bored gossip. There's no market for bleeding hearts nowadays. And if you try to peddle one, the best you'll get is a stiff smile and an injunction to join the club. I got home at 4:05 in what you might laughingly call the morning. The hands of the clock, a frosty right angle. The flat, cold and empty. Hostile. An iceberg with furniture. 0405, and in the bedroom, the traditional note pinned, traditionally, to the pillow.
Steve, I've tried in all kinds of ways to let you know this was happening. But either you were too stupid to read the signals, or else you just didn't care. I've never doubted your intelligence, so what does that leave? Anyway, in the upshot, it all adds up to the party's over, and I don't think there's any point in us trying to pretend otherwise. I've cleared my things out, and anything that's left, I don't want. That includes you. Shirley.
In the upshot, I thought. What the hell's an upshot? Your dinner's in the upshot. Was there a place called Upshot Creek? Or was upshot what happened when a firing squad woke you at dawn? I'm glad you like our medieval soap breaker. We found it in a charming little upshot. It had started off lousy and then degenerated. Already I was forgetting her tinkly small laugh, conscious and affected as a silver wooden leg. The invisible camera she always seemed to think was trained on her. The career she always talked about as though it was a wasting disease. And while I was standing there, forgetting, the phone rang. Hello?
You just got home?
I just got home, yeah.
I've been thinking.
Who is this?
I ain't unsympathetic. I see your angle, but I got to consider number one. I staked you till you got your break. Now what do you turn and tell me?
I tell you this, you've got the wrong number. That was the last crazy straw. I closed the place and went out. The stars were bits of ice. The provinces of astronauts and computers. The air bit. I went round to a club I knew where nobody had yet invented time. The place had all the dreary charm of an unmade bed. But the barman was still vertical. Wearing the world like a hair shirt. He looked like practically any portrait of Rupert Brooke. Hello, Frank.
Hello.
You closed?
Just hauling up the drawbridge.
Drop in a minute for a fugitive.
What's it to be?
Something for a crisis.
We cater for every kind of crisis, except financial.
My bird walked out on me.
You're about the 27th tonight.
What's good for it, Frank?
Whiskey's safe.
Well, why so cautious?
I'm short of details. Maybe you're glad she lit out. Okay, whiskey celebrates. Maybe you're not so glad. Okay, whiskey drowns your sorrows.
Whiskey.
The staple diet of hairy heroes.
He opened a bottle of whiskey. It had been made in Japan in a Mitsubishi blast furnace. We punished it in silence. Then opened another from the same home. Cheers, Frank.
Cheers.
Where do birds go when they walk out on you?
Other men.
Not this one.
Home to mother?
Got no mother.
Home to daddy.
No daddy either.
I'll check up with the orphanage you dragged her out of.
I love you, Frank. You had all the warm, impulsive sympathy of a spit in the eye.
I try hard to love you all. But at this time of the morning, I keep wishing I worked in a guided missiles plant.
You do. Here's to sex.
It's a temperance. There's less of it.
It all began to spin. Flip talk, flyaway bird. Clink, glasses clink. Loose colliding bones in my head. Barman weary Rupert Brooke, some corner of a furry tongue. Wheels and wheels and wheels again within the wheels. And a crow voice calling in the depths of a forest. Glass leaves tinkling from special tumbled trees all earmarked. This year will be a record year for the export of silver wooden legs. And a crow voice calling far away.
All tickets, please. All tickets, please. Your ticket, sir.
What the hell am I doing here?
None of my business, sir. As long as you're not doing it without a ticket.
I've been smashed before, and no doubt I'll be smashed again, but this has never happened.
Your ticket, sir.
There you are. Where does it say I'm going?
Glasgow.
I don't remember buying it.
There you are, sir. Thank you.
Do you think my subconscious is trying to tell me something?
Buffy car's open, sir.
And open it was, selling dog hairs for the recently savaged, rattling along at 100 miles an hour. And you could smile at your neighbor and pretend it was the speed that made the glass shake, and not your hand.
How are you today, Mr. Gardner?
Frightened to look at the papers.
Why?
I might be in the obituary column.
You really did tie one on last night, didn't you?
Yeah, I really did.
My name's McIntosh, by the way.
I've a feeling I should know that.
Your friendly neighborhood Samaritan.
You helped me on the train, right?
With the assistance of a West Indian taxi driver.
There's integration for you.
I thought he was never going to stop laughing.
That's me, spreading joy wherever I go.
You promised to set him up someday with his own steel band.
He'll take away my honorary membership of the Noise Abatement Society.
Wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise.
Who said that, Chairman Mao?
I doubt it. May I buy you a drink?
No, thank you. I just needed a couple to stabilize me. Any other small details you can fill in for me?
A girl called Shirley.
Yes, Shirley.
She didn't seem to be your favorite person.
No.
It didn't sound as though she would ever get her own steel band.
How right you are.
You don't mind me telling you all this?
As long as it's not leading up to Shirley being found strangled with her own tights.
I'm sure you'd have mentioned that. You were more than forthcoming.
How much more?
Somebody called Judy something.
Judy Clark?
Yes, that was the name.
What was I saying about her?
Well, it was getting difficult at that point. You weren't making too much sense.
You've just described the way I feel now.
I got the impression that if you managed to contact her, whatever was bothering you would suddenly be all right.
If I conveyed that impression, I must have been out of my mind. I'm very grateful to you.
Oh, don't mention it. I know the feeling. I once flew up from London to Glasgow without knowing a thing about it. One minute, I was in a pub in Hampstead. The next thing, I was in a pub in Glasgow. And in between, a blank. You're sure you wouldn't like a drink?
Quite sure, thank you. I'm going back to hibernate in my carriage until the train gets in. The train got in sometime in the late afternoon. I had a monumental headache and a sense of no particular purpose. I needed a shave. I needed a friend. So I went calling on a man I knew and rang his bell. And it seemed quite normal when the wrong door opened.
You looking for Honey Gorman?
Yes, I am.
Well, he's not here anymore.
Do you know where I can find him?
Ridley Cemetery.
How long ago?
Oh, about 3 months back. You want to look round the flat? I've got a key.
No, thank you.
The flat's up for sale. Lovely place. And his niece left the key with me. For handiness, like.
I was going to ask about her.
Right cut up she was. Poor lassie. Lost her mother and father in an air crash. Then honey gets himself killed in a car.
She must hate machinery.
Oh, you're right there.
Is she still at the same address?
She is.
Honey Gorman. A small legend. Not very tall, but built to last. A face whose ancestors had known the great potato famine. But he was rich. Betting shops. One glorious night, say 40 years ago, he had stood up in a canvas ring and fought for a world title. He lost that one, too. His niece had never known all that. The slums that the more snobbish rats avoided. People swallowing bureaucratic insults so that their children could have bread. Grey tenement faces. Pockets that no longer even had coin dust. Pot bellies that had nothing to do with prosperity, but with a savage irony of its opposite. She was cool and elegant and looked as though she carried a gene for wealth. Money makes its own genealogy. She still lived on the right side of the tracks. The street with its custom-built trees, the large, cool houses. A crescent, 9 steps up to the door, the bell, the answer phone.
Who is it?
Steve Gardner.
Who?
Steve Gardner. You used to know me.
I didn't, but come up anyway.
The automatic door, the hall. So silent that even scent of early hyacinths seemed a sound. The stairs whose carpets purred around your ankles like Persian cats. And at the door of the flat, a girl, waiting. Tall, cool, dark, and elegant. Everything that Judy Clark was, but not Judy Clark. I was told she was still at the same address.
She is.
I'd like to see her.
You can't.
Are you a bodyguard or something?
We share the flat. Most other things we don't share.
Couldn't we take our mutual aggression inside?
Why not?
The flat was still beautiful. Walls the color of salt, the cunning points of color, and the good-mannered furniture. The photograph on the mantelpiece of 2 laughing, dead people.
Her parents?
Yeah, I know.
You're not wasting any time, are you?
I'm sorry, I'm not with you.
Nor are you ever likely to be.
At last, something we agree about. You have a name?
Celia Carson.
And just what was I supposed to be doing when I mentioned I knew about Judy's parents?
Rehearsing, perhaps?
Rehearsing what?
The big, masculine, come weep on my shoulder approach. Poor dear Judy. First your parents, and now...
I heard about that.
I'm sure you did. And came running?
If I had 3 wishes, one of them would be to know just what the hell you're talking about.
Oh, come on. I wasn't born as soft as Judy.
You weren't born at all. You were carved out of something very hard and extremely expensive.
Perhaps that's why I can recognize a fortune hunter when I see one.
Well, well, well.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Judy's a very rich girl now, isn't she?
I suppose she is.
You damn well know she is.
So?
All these months she tried to contact you. All the telephone calls you weren't in to take. All the letters you didn't answer.
There were reasons.
Bigger game, perhaps. And maybe it got away. And maybe you heard about Judy's uncle. And maybe you knew she was his only relative. I mean, it's all too much to be coincidence, isn't it?
I can see that to a certain kind of mentality it might appear that way.
A certain kind of mentality? Go home.
You make home seem very attractive right now.
You're too late anyway.
Yes?
Because there are better and faster fortune hunters than you, and Judy's gone off with one.
Oh, well, win one, lose one. That's the way it goes. So I'll go home, as you suggest. Maybe my trip up here is tax-deductible as a business expense. I'd like to say it was nice meeting you, but I promised my stockbroker not to tell lies.
Wait.
Well, what now?
You might be the lesser of 2 evils.
You're beginning to warm to me.
Did you ever meet Peter Calder?
Never.
He's...
Is this the man Judy's got herself involved with?
Yes.
And what can I do about it?
Go and see her. Talk her out of Peter Calder.
She's old enough to run her own life.
Sometimes people's lives are too important to be left to themselves.
Are you always jealous of her, man?
Look, think what you like of me. I don't give a damn. But please, go and talk to her.
She'll only tell me to get lost.
Your ego can stand a tiny bruise like that. Besides, you owe her this.
Are you saying this is all my fault?
Yes. Isn't it?
Where is she?
I had a postcard from her the other day. Yes, here it is.
The postcard showed a hotel small enough and cute enough to fit snugly into an American's itinerary. Behind the hotel, a stagey line of hills, bisected by the bright thrust of a loch. The loch, according to the caption, was called Loch Darrick. The hotel was called, in a burst of brilliance, the Loch Darrick Hotel. On the back of the card, Judy had written that she had arrived safely. I went back into the city's afternoon and made inquiries at an information kiosk. Tell me about Loch Darrick.
Loch Darrick, sir?
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. Famed in song and story, sir. Mm. You may have heard what Sir Walter Scott once said about it.
I was in the washroom at the time.
Quite. You wish to visit Loch Darrick?
Reluctantly, yeah.
Let me see now. Well, the train's discontinued, and the steamer service doesn't start until next month. And the road's closed to vehicles over 1,500 weights.
Do I need a visa?
Your best way would be to take the bus to Balearic.
Well, how far is that from Loch Darrick?
About 10 miles.
And what do I do after Balearic?
In Scotland, sir, we only provide the shrines. The pilgrims make their own arrangements.
Balearic had more syllables than houses. There was one piebald cottage and a Neolithic petrol pump. An old man stood beside it, his eyes vague and remote, as though he was wondering how Prince Charles Edward Stuart was faring down at Derby 2 centuries ago. Excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me.
I was watching the geese.
Well, I was wondering if you could tell me...
Wait you here a minute, young man. There is something I must fetch if our conversation is to thrive.
Well, what do you know?
I was fetching my hearing aid. I'm as deaf as a stone without it.
I'm very sorry.
So, what was it you wished?
How do I get to the Loch Darrick Hotel?
Go back to where you came from.
But I will...
One woman has made you unhappy. The one you seek will make you unhappier. There is death near her.
All I want to know is...
Go back where you came from.
No!
Then... Someone else will tell you the road you seek. It will not be I.
I set off in the teeth of the fates, in a sharp, growing little wind, to walk the 10 long, dreary miles. The light was fading, and the road kept doubling back on itself, as though it did not really like where it was going. I had covered most of it when the car drew up behind me. Desperately.
Jump in.
You did say jump in.
Figure of speech. Squeeze in.
Right. Let's see. Oh, there we are. I made it. Sociable in here, isn't it?
Yes and no. My boyfriends complain that it restricts their freedom of movement.
And when the windscreen wipe was working, they get their hair combed.
Hold tight.
What does this beast run on? Rocket fuel?
Built it myself. For the hill climbs next year.
Everest, I presume.
90 horses under that bonnet.
Oh, maybe the old prophet back there was right.
What was that you said about a prophet?
An old man I met back along the road. He's the first prophet I ever met with a hearing aid.
Oh, you mean old Hamish. He's a phony.
You reckon?
Yes. Put it this way. I know for a fact that Hamish has been doing the football pools for years, but he's never won anything. What kind of a profit's that?
I feel you have a point there.
Where was it you wanted to go?
The hotel, please.
You've arrived.
It was dark when I walked into the hotel. The place had a bewildered, off-season look of existence without function. I rang a bell that seemed to go tolling endlessly through emptiness, like a bell on a dangerous reef. I remember the old man with the hearing aid, and for a moment, I was frightened. Then I saw a woman come along, and her hands were spattered with blood.
Was that you ringing the bell?
Yes, it was.
Oh, I was cleaning rabbits in the kitchen. I didn't hear you at first.
I believe there's a friend of mine staying here.
Huh?
Her name is Clark.
Oh, yes, Miss Clark. She's here, all right.
Oh, where do I find her?
She's in room 8.
And where is that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't think she's in just now.
Oh.
She's been out most of the day with Mr. Calder.
I see.
Is she expecting you?
No, I thought I would drop in and surprise her.
Oh, well, they'll be back soon for high tea. Wait a minute. There they are now.
And there she was. And looking at her, you could imagine her ghost. The life had left her. She was haggard. Even her clothes looked defeated. And then I saw the man she was with. Tall and tweedy. The kind of Greek god profile that's usually only valid on a coin. Dressed carefully for the open air. Just inside the doorway, he stopped to tap the barometer. Not because he cared if the glass was falling or even about to float round the room, but because it was the nearest thing within reach to a mirror. And whilst he was playing Narcissus, Judy came right up to me and stopped. Hello, Judy.
What brings you here?
I'm damned if I know.
That's not like you. Not like you at all. What you didn't know, you used to be able to invent.
I thought I might be able to help you.
What makes you think I need help?
I talked to a girl called Celia.
Celia should mind her own business.
Well, she seemed to think...
Celia's a big drama queen.
Couldn't we at least talk...
There's nothing to talk about.
Then why are you so defensive? Now, what's so funny?
Well, you are. Coming along here like a probation officer, hauling back a delinquent.
Is that what you are?
Don't be foolish. Come along home like a good little girl. Do you think I'm in need of care and protection?
Maybe you are.
And maybe I have been for a long time. But where were you then?
Judy, do we have to?
Oh, go away. Why don't you go away and leave me alone?
Is this man annoying you, Judy?
All men annoy me. Every last one of them.
You were saying?
What was that all about?
I thought you were going to horsewhip me or something equally dated.
Whatever I did to you would certainly not be dated. Don't think I couldn't.
Except that you might get your gorgeous profile bent.
Oh, look, I've been through this scene often. Boringly often. I'm a very handsome man. I've even been called beautiful. Sometimes it creates prejudice, like being black. Buy your drink?
The bar isn't open.
Then you're saved the embarrassment of refusing.
It would be no embarrassment, I assure you.
Just for the record, who are you anyway?
The name is Gardner.
I can't ever recall Judy mentioning you.
The world's filled with people not mentioning me. It doesn't disturb me.
I was trying, in my simple, blundering way, to find out where you fitted in.
Perhaps I don't.
Now, that could be the exact truth. Maybe once you did, but not anymore. The store's under new management, if you see what I mean.
I see what you mean. But I don't have to take your word for it.
You don't have to. I thought Judy made the point as well.
You're pretty sure of yourself, aren't you?
The secret of my success. You've had it, Gardner, whatever it was. So why not face up to it? Now, if you'll excuse me, I've better things to do.
It is better, as the man said, to travel hopefully than to arrive. I looked in at the dining room. It was dark brown and gloomy, and its tables looked like square igloos. There was a strong, historical smell of cabbage. Food suddenly seemed a very low priority. I left the ingrowing dining room. I was feeling vaguely foolish, like a St. Bernard dog that had ploughed bravely through the alpine snow with his little barrel of brandy around his neck and a great big happy errand of mercy smile on its face, only to find a teetotaler who didn't want rescue at all. So I went into the lounge. At first it seemed deserted, and then I saw the man who sat in the far corner. There was a flash of steel as his hands moved, and then I saw that he was knitting.
Good evening, Gardner.
Inspector Gordon, as I live and breathe.
Come and join me.
Oh, have you a spare pair of needles?
I learned to knit when I was in the hospital during the war. I still use it as a kind of occupational therapy.
And what brings you down here?
Oh, I'm on holiday. I started off with a friend of mine in Edinburgh, but I was forced to flee.
Why?
Well, the price of friendship, Gardner, is other people's children. Oh, but man, it's grand to be able to relax.
You never relax.
And tell me, how have you been living these days?
In a kind of nightmare.
Well, then you'll tone in beautifully with the landscape down here.
So you're not really relaxing at all, then?
What is wrong between you and the lady?
Why should anything be wrong?
Well, that was a funny, brittle encounter you had with her, and you didn't come off too well with Calder either.
Tell me about Calder.
Oh, what is there to tell, man? A remittance man, but whence comes his remittance? A man of independent means, but who furnishes the means of independence? In the season, a great killer of fish. And at any season, a great killer of ladies.
And you have your beady little eye on him.
Oh, well, let's just say he might be part of the pattern. This evening, I am sitting here celebrating the anniversary of a man's death.
Well, I suppose
he was a tinker and no man's enemy, you would have said, but maybe his own. Yet somebody butchered him on a small island about a mile out in the loch there.
And you still haven't found the killer?
We haven't yet found the killer.
That's what brings you here, then?
That and something more than that.
Such as?
The same world spinning at the same speed on the same axis. The same hills and the same secret loch.
Look, Gordon.
The same people back at the same hotel.
Plus you and Judy Clark and myself.
Oh, we are irrelevant.
But surely you don't expect...
I expect nothing. I merely wonder.
About what?
I wonder if Elspeth MacDonald will again see the devil in the likeness of a black man.
You're not serious.
And I wonder, too, if the same concatenation of people and place brings about the same events.
But how do you expect this thing to happen? And where? And when?
In part one of The Wolf Far Hence by Edward Boyd, the parts were played as follows. Steve Gardner, Teddy Johnson, Frank the Barman, Arthur Boland, Celia Carson, June Andrews, an old Highlander, E.J.P. Mace, the lady in the sports car, Leslie Blackater, the hotel waitress, Marjorie Diehl, Judy Clark, Janet Michael, Peter Calder, Glenn Michael, Detective Inspector Gordon, Moultrie Kelso. The Wolf Far Hence was produced in our Glasgow studios by Eddie Fraser.